Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to talk about cars. If you'd like to join us, it's pretty easy. You just give us a call, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Just give us a call, and if you want, ladies, you can say, my husband says, and you can start it that way, or you can say, my dad and my husband disagree about this, or, and this is, if you want me to side with you, then you just tap the phone like this. Okay? Those are the kind of signals Gil and I use. And Gil runs the big spaceship, and I'm sitting in the back in the first class seat just with my feet up in the air doing nothing. So while Gil actually puts the show on the air. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. Been around cars since 1968. And I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, and I have nothing to sell you. Nothing. Nothing. I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm not here to thump my chest and tell you I'm the best shop in the whole wide world. No, I'm not any of that. You see, in our industry, just like most of the people on talk radio, they're there to generate business. What I'm here to do, what I hope to do, is generate confidence in our industry. Now, it is true that I have shops all over the valley that I will send you to. And the reason why is because they're good shops. And I work really hard to ensure that the people I refer, the shops I refer callers and clients and customers and friends to, are good shops. And I'll tell you how successful I've been. Since 1988, when we first started, it was 88 or 89, we first started the best car repair shops list. I've removed a couple of shops, but and here's my promise to you. If you go see one of my shops and you have a problem, I want you to go through an approved dispute resolution process. And if that happens and the shop is told to give you back $200 and the shop doesn't, I will. Up to $5,000. I will up to $5,000. So since the early 90s and maybe even 88, 89, I've never done that. I've never done that. I came close one time because I had a shop that was hedging on giving a customer a refund, and it had already been established the refund was necessary. And so we had already written the check when all of a sudden this gentleman decided that he'd pay the bill. And it wasn't because we put pressure on it, because the customer is going to get taken care of with either his check or mine, but that was how it works. So we do have a good list of great shops. MarkSalem.com has that. But I wanted to talk to you about something that's kind of unusual because somebody brought it to my attention. There's lots of women in the auto repair industry. There's lots of women. And as I sat here this morning in preparation for the show, when I started like 10 minutes ago, I'm looking at the list of women and I'm thinking to myself, these are all very strong women. These aren't wallflowers. Nothing wrong with wallflowers. But so let's go over a couple of them. We've got Bob and Ellen at Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Ellen handles the front counter. Bob handles the shop. You don't need to talk to Ellen for more than 3 or 4 minutes to understand that, A, she knows a lot about cars, and, B, you're not going to BS her. That's all there is to it. And obviously, ladies gravitate to ladies, and women gravitate to women. So in those circumstances, it's kind of nice, I think, I can speak on the majority of the women, to walk in and find a lady there. So Bob and Ellen, and I've known Bob and Ellen for more than 10 years, probably more than 20. And they're good people, really good people. Then you got Tom Blackwell and Polly at Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Polly is the balance for Tom. Tom has hit his head so many times walking underneath cars on the hoist and stuff. God bless Polly. She puts up with him. But if you go to Blackwell Automotive, you'll meet Polly, and again, a very strong-willed and a very, very kind woman. You've got Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair. And these people are there every day. Ellen's there every day. Polly is there most days. Ellen is there. Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa, Main Street and Stapley. Thelma's there almost all day long. And then Vic and Craig at Bell Automotive in Scottsdale. Vicky's there most all the time. So there's lots of women. So if you're a lady who would like to do business with a shop that has a presence, that there's a lady there that has presence and even better yet, has authority, then I can probably hook you up with one. Now, mine's the same way. My shop is run by my daughter, Andy, and my son, Alan. And so Andy, her biggest problem is her brother. But they get along great, and they really do a good job. He handles the shops, and she handles him. And so it's an issue that, again, I'm taking advantage of. And my wife has been working with me hand in hand since we first opened up our first car repair shop in 1979. So we've been around the block a few times. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Last week we had a conversation about oil. My background in oil is rather extensive. I've been trained by Chevron and Valvoline in a laboratory kind of environment, and I think most people in that arena would know that Mark Salem knows more than the average bear about engine oil. So we had a caller last week talk about engine oil, and of course there's a lot of talk about engine oil because we're in this transition from the old thick peanut butter oils to oils called synthetics that flow like water, that look like water. And everybody has this pillow mentality. We need marshmallows in our engine to soften everything. We need thick peanut butter that's slightly fluid to lubricate everything. So there was a discussion after last week's show about that, and there was a gentleman who really took issue with what I said in a very polite and genuinely, you know, let's have a conversation way. And he really represents the thought process of many people, and that is, when I work my truck hard, I want a 2050 oil, a 20 weight, and a 2050 means it flows like a 20 weight when it's cold. So we don't want peanut butter when it's cold. We want something akin to warm maple syrup. That's what we want our oil to flow like. 50 weight is more like peanut butter, and we want it to flow like a 50 weight when it's really hot, and I'm pulling a horse trailer full of horses and a tractor behind that. So that's what the 1030 means. Flows like a 10 weight. Now, a 10 weight would have properties for the people in Minnesota in the very coldest environments. But now we have a 5 weight, and now we have a 0 weight. So we have a 0-20. We have a 5-20 and a 5-30. And that we're probably going to have a 0-10. I think that's being looked at right now. So we have lots of stuff, but let me put it to you in real simple terms. Your engine is two pieces of metal rubbing together very fast. I'll give you an example. At 3,000 RPM means revolutions per minute. 3,000 revolutions per minute. That's 50 revolutions per second. Your motor is spinning. One revolution of the crankshaft. The crankshaft's connected to the camshaft and the oil pump and the fuel pump. And the camshaft's driven by the crankshaft. And the valves are driven by the cam that's driven by the camshaft that's driven by the crankshaft. So this crankshaft thing in your motor is the big dog. It's the one that has to be there and in perfect synchronization or there's a big problem. So the crankshaft at 3,000 RPMs is doing 50 revolutions a second. Now, I know you're going to laugh at me, but it's okay. Hummingbird wings flap at about the same amount at 50 revolutions or 50 flaps per second. Okay? So that's how fast your motor's running. We got this really hot metal rubbing against one another. The tolerances are measured in the thickness of a hair. 1, 2, and maybe 3/1000ths of an inch. So close your eyes. We're going to haul a load of horses. We're going to leave Phoenix and we're going to drive to Flagstaff. And we're in a little bit of hurry. So we got 4 horses in a trailer and a whole bunch of hay. My wife's got 12 cases of beer in there for her friends. And we've got saddles and tack. And we're actually a little heavier than we should be. The gross of the truck and the gross of the trailer is actually a little, the actual weight of the truck and the trailer is actually a little above what we should be carrying. So we're going to take off to Flagstaff. So we have these pieces of metal rubbing against one another. 3,000 RPM. We're doing 70 miles an hour. We're in third gear. And the motor is just... Well, you want peanut butter between those two pieces of metal that have a clearance of maybe the thickness of a human hair? Do you want peanut butter or do you want water? Peanut butter or water? I use water only because everybody knows the consistency of water. So I suggest to you that it's a good idea that we use water, because water will get in, gather up the heat, provide the lubrication, and get the heck out. So we're going to push water in, push water. We're not going to use peanut butter between two pieces of metal rubbing against one another 50 times a second. We're not going to use peanut butter. The days of the peanut butter oil are gone. They're gone. We're using oil that has the consistency of water. It's better fuel economy, protects your engines better. And here's the thing. Oil is supposed to provide lubrication. What does it best? Synthetics. Oil is supposed to carry the heat away. Bingo, synthetics. Oil is supposed to provide a shield so we have minimal amount of wear. Bingo, synthetics. Oils, synthetics will flow at 60 below zero. They won't be peanut butter. They won't be butter. They won't be frosting. And they don't burn up till 500 degrees when they turn to a tar. Here's the good news. Your motor will never last that high. Your motor is never going to get to 500 degrees, and if it does, it'll only be once. So when you start talking about all these different things, your engine runs at 210, 220 degrees Fahrenheit. It's toast at 500 degrees, but your oil isn't. You've ruined it, but it isn't the oil's fault. So that's kind of what it's all about, is we're making a transition. So there's a lot of old gray-haired guys that think Mark Salem's wrong when I tell you to put a 020 or a synthetic in your big bad Ford F-350 7.3 or your 6.7 and you haul backhoes. You're crazy, Mark Salem. Okay, well, read the sticker on your truck and tell me I'm crazy, because the people that made your Dodge, your Ford, your Chevy tell you to use those kinds of oils, the synthetics. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got 4 lines open. We've got one taken already, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, if you can't decide which tires to buy, or if you have a discussion with your husband about if he wants this and you want that and you want me to comment on that, any of that kind of stuff, I'm happy to help you with. 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good friend of mine. Nate owns Strictly Diesel. He's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And when it comes to Chevy and Dodge and Ford diesel trucks, Nate is a tremendous source for not only you, but for me as well. There are times I need help, and my help rope is headed Nate's way, because I have a question that I don't know the answer to. So if you're up in Phoenix, actually if you're anywhere in the valley and you've got a truck with a diesel and you're having a tough time getting a problem fixed, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair would be the place I would send you. Patrick, good morning.
Mark, how's your day?
You know, it started out good. My wife didn't hit me with the broom to wake me up, so that... It's a good day.
Yes, indeed. Hey, so I was just listening to your thing about the oil, and it was great, but it made me call in for, I got two things. One, I got my motorcycle will run, it will start perfectly fine all summer long. It's a Hayabusa, so it's a inline four.
Uh-huh.
And I got 1050 in it. But in the when it gets in the summertime, I mean, I'm sorry, in the wintertime, here at work, at my house, it'll start fine, and then I go to work, I work all day, and I get off at 11:30, and I go out to start it at 11:30 in the morning, and I go out to start it, and it bogs down, and I'm wondering, but it's only in the wintertime, and I'm wondering if I'm using 1050 right now, should I bump up to 2050, and probably would be a little easier for starting it.
Now the problem is in the cold weather or the warm weather?
In the cold weather.
Okay. So you're at a 1050 now. It's going to flow like a 10 weight when it's cold, and it'll fold like a 50 weight when it's hot. So in your particular case, it's no matter what, it's going to flow like a 10 weight no matter. I mean, that's good to about zero, and you won't be below zero. Is when you say it doesn't start, does it crank slower? Does it go, instead of going, yeah, does it go ruh, 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 like that?
No, it cranks a little faster, but it doesn't, it works harder at doing it. It doesn't sound like it's slower cranking. It just seems like it's working a little harder, and then the battery will cut out. But it doesn't happen all summer long.
Okay.
It only happens in the winter.
Okay, we're making progress. We're making progress. A colder motor is always going to take more amps, and I need your battery to start somewhere. You can take two wires and go to the positive and negative. Put a stupid little voltmeter up close by or whatever if you don't already have one. But I want it to be when you turn the key on. I want it to be close to 13, and when you hit the key, I don't want to drop below 9.6.
It doesn't.
And the temperature will tell you that. But you're running out of electricity before sometimes you get this running. Why couldn't this be a battery issue?
It might be, but it only happens when it's like really coldish, 40 or 50 degrees. Even it's at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
It only happens then. It does not happen when it's above 70 degrees, or even 60. It doesn't ever happen the rest of the year. It only happens at that time, and it doesn't even happen at my house when I started in the morning at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning to go to work. It's sitting in my garage. It does not happen here. It only happens once I've got it to work the day, and I go out to get on it, and it's only when it's in the deep winter time.
Okay.
Well, it's Arizona, so deep winter is quotes. But
why don't you try it 10:30? I mean,
10:30.
Sure, I know you. There's no such thing as pillows. So there's no such thing as foam.
I get that. Here's what I'm thinking. What I thought I heard you say was the lower number, the higher the low number, the thinner it is when it's cold.
Still, you still have peanut butter in your motor. Your 50 weights of peanut butter. You still have that. My suggestion is let's go to a 1030 synthetic. Do an oil change. Do a 1030.
I've already got synthetic in it.
Let's go to a 10. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. My suggestion is go to a 1030 synthetic and see if it changes it. If it changes it for the better, it's an oil issue. If it doesn't change it for the better, then I'm going to guess that you have an electrical problem, because when it's cold, the engine's cold, everything's contracted, and it takes a lot more amperage to crank over a cold engine than it does something in the spring and the fall and the summer in Arizona. And so I would probably be looking at the battery voltage, and I would want the battery to be fully charged at 13, and I wouldn't want my starter to drop the battery power. And your 9.6 is really the floor, but I'd probably be in the 10.5 range. So those are the two things that would cause the problem. Those are my suggestions. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And any kind of call, tires and stuff like that. But just quickly, we're going to go back to a 3,000 RPM as you're driving down the road, 3,000 RPM, which is the engine is spinning at 50 times a second, which is what hummingbird wings are flapping at, 50 times a second. Can you imagine counting the flaps of a hummingbird 50 times a second? Well, that's what your motor's doing. Now, there's going to be some car guys out there that are going, Mark, people don't go 3,000 RPM anymore because we have overdrive transmissions and they're running at about 1,200, 1,300 RPM, not 3,000. I know you're right. I'm just using it as an example. That's all. There are times that all of us experience that higher RPM when we hit passing gear or we're going up a hill and we're hauling a load of horses or whatever, hay or you know, your sand buggy. So the idea is if you want your engine to live the longest, forget about the past. We no longer treat our motors. They don't have the same spark plugs. They don't have the same oil. They don't have the same coolant. They don't have the same air systems, fuel systems, engine control, fuel controls. Everything is different. So to think that we were okay in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and that would carry us to the, you know, today where we're at, the 2021, it's just not true. The cars are different. In the old days, we used to replace the engines and they'd start sucking oil and blowing blue smoke well between the 70 and 100,000 mile range. Today we have newer model cars that already have 200,000 miles on them and they're not using any oil. They're not puffing any blue smoke. We've got cars in our fleet that have 300 and 400,000 miles and the engines haven't been opened yet. We're making tremendous progress. And that's part of the problem in my industry, in the auto repair industry, is we only really need to see you once or maybe twice a year, maybe once a year. And that means there's lots of lost sales. And so as a result of that, we've come up with all these tricks to get you in so we can take a bite of your wallet. That's what it's all about. In the old days, you came in every 3,000 miles. We got your oil changed, tire rotation. How about a flush? Belts, hoses. Oh, your shock absorbers are looking old. Your lower control arm bushings are looking bad. Da, 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 da. But now we only see you once a year. And, we got to change because that's an income stream that we lost. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Did you know?
Well, it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday right here on KKNT 960 The Patriot, we're talking about cars, car repair, car engine oil, gasolines. Is one better than the other? My husband says this. My brother says that. Any of those kinds of issues we can talk about. And so all you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you have an argument with you and your spouse, then you can take either side you want. I'm not going to take sides. I'm just going to discuss the plausibility of each side of the discussion and give you my opinion. Or if you're looking at a new car and you want to know about maybe one of the features of the new car, then we can do that as well. 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa has been around. Brian and Thelma, I know them personally, as I do all the owners of all the shops that I can recommend to you. So it's the only shop in Mesa, but he has ASE certified technicians. His family and Thelma's family's roots go back to the 60s with respect to gas stations and car repair. So these young people, young compared to me, Brian and Thelma, they've been around a long time and they're trustworthy, and I can assure you that things will be fine and they will do a good job for you. In addition to that, there's another old timer in town, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil, he's been in the Phoenix area since 1968. He does transmission work, he does vibrations, he does fluid changes and flushes, he does all that kind of stuff. So no matter what kind of a transmission issue you might have, you might want to run it by Phil or one of his guys at Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. It's a difficult time in the car industry because we're making so many changes and people are getting uncomfortable. There's many of you remember the 70s, 3,000 mile oil changes. You didn't use Arco graphite because it did this. And then when we went from a green coolant to an orange coolant, it caused all kinds of problems and it was a bad coolant. And then we went from bias ply to steel belted radial tires. And then we had the Firestone fiasco where we had steel belt tires blowing up right and left. And then we went from points and condensers to electronic ignition. And then we did away with the distributor altogether. Now we have these spark plugs that last 100 to 150,000 miles. that cost $25 a piece? Wow. And we have air filters and air systems. We have smart cars. The car knows what's going on. Then we put controls in the cars to not let you do damage to it. So now we're starting to shut them down. We're not going to let you damage the motor. We're not going to let you drag race somebody until you blow parts through the hood of your car. We're going to force you into doing, not force you, we're going to turn on lights to make sure you understand when you're due for all of those services. There's a big deal going on in the auto repair industry right now. You probably noticed it because of the ads and because of a lot of other things out there. But in reality, if anybody has bought a car in the last 10 years, from 2010 and north of that, your visits to your auto repair shop may only be one or twice a year. No longer is it every 3,000 miles. But if they take you backwards to Barney Rubble and Fred Flintstone time, and they tell you, I don't believe in the new oils and the new tires and the new belts and the new fluids and the new coolants and the new brake fluids and all that kind of stuff. I don't believe in that. So then I wonder, Mark Salem wonders, is the reason you don't believe in that is because those are all going to be annual kind of services instead of every 3,000 miles? Or are they going to be five-year services instead of the year you want them to be? So those are the kinds of questions that we're going to have. Gil, who you got?
Say hello to Jim.
Jim, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, I have a 2016 Chevy Silverado with the Duramax in it.
Okay.
We pretty much use it for towing. It has 63,000 miles on it. And in the manual it says for the coolant change, 150 every 5 years. So what would you suggest?
And you said it was a 16, so you're at 5 years now, and it's never been done in 63,000 miles?
No.
Okay,
no.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think you're fine. You know what? If you wanted to take me to the NASCAR race, you know, up in New England next week, I'll go with you in your truck, and I won't bring any tools. No, you're due. I would think that this would be a good time, the beginning of the summer, for you to grab somebody that has a special. Obviously, uh-huh. They're going to flush your cooling system out, and they're going to replace it with coolant, and you're going to go on your way, and that's it.
What is a good charge for that?
It'll depend on the coolant they're using. We have a variety of options. We can use the General Motors. I think it's called Dexcool. But each and every other of the companies have their own comparable, the same as, same stuff, different name kind of stuff. But I would suggest that you're certainly going to be in the $100 to $150 range. So,
okay.
And now, but wait just a second.
Yes.
Be careful about those old add-ons. Oh, we need to do your thermostat. Why? We need to flush your engine and your radiator, but we got to power flush your radiator and just flush your engine. Oh. See, when we flush, we should flush the radiator and the heater core and the engine all at once. That's pretty easy. We all know how to do it. The other issue is when are we going to put additives in there? Well, really and truly, Jim, we've got a water pump lubricant, and then we have this other additive that magically collects all the mineral deposits and hangs on to them. And then we have one of these additives that lubricates the water pump. And those three additives are part of your flush package, and your flush package is $229. So, and then the question is how about we back out all of those special liquids, and how about we just put coolant in it? One last thing, the thing that bugs me a lot is the overflow jug. You know where that's at, right?
Yes.
We need to flush that too good. There's no reason not to take a garden hose with a high-pressure nozzle and stick it down inside that, pull the tube off of the radiator where it goes under, by the radiator cap, and just flush that trash out of there so we have a nice, clear, you know, plastic container. It drives me crazy when my guys don't do that. They know that I want them to clean that because that's the only visual you're going to have that somebody was underneath your hood is the coolant recovery tank's going to be clean. So,
okay.
But that's, be careful of the water pump lubricants. I want you to know those are not things that I sell.
All right. Thank you. All right. You bet.
There's a lot of additives out there right now, and I can tell you what the additives really do more than anything else. The additives take money out of your pocket, and it adds it to theirs. That's all there is to it. It's just an additive. And if really and truly, if it was real beneficial and it gave you better fuel economy or made your motor last longer and all that kind of stuff, it would probably be in your oil. It would probably be in your coolant already. But the additives, I have to admit, the additives are very lucrative. We can buy a can of... Say that again?
Time for a break.
Okay. You can add the lubricant into it, but really, it really does is add a lot of money to my pocket. We'll be back in a minute. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. The name of this show is Under the Hood with Mark Salem. We're talking about car repair problems and fluids and additives and the way that you should take care of your car and the way you shouldn't take care of your car and who you should listen to and who you should ignore. And basically, that's pretty simple and it's pretty self-explanatory. There's lots of additives out there that we can add to your car, and many of them just add money to our pocket and nothing to your car. If your car lasted longer, then they'd put it in there at the beginning. However, one other thing. The cars of today, if you don't overheat them significantly, if you don't just cook them by trying to drive another 5 miles when the radiator's blown up, then and you don't run them low on oil, that car will go 300,000 and 400,000 and 500,000 miles. Don't think for a minute that you can add something to it that the car's going to love you more and go six. The only motors we replace in my shop are ones that are damaged by the people behind the steering wheel. Every car we've ever, no, 95% of every car we've ever taken the engine apart has been damaged by the person that was whose hands was on the steering wheel, and it's all because they run them low on oil, or they only need to go another 2 miles, and their needle is already in the red zone. Those are bad choices. A tow truck's going to cost you $100 or $200, and an engine in today's cars can run you on the bottom end $15,000 and on the top end $40,000 to $50,000. So think that tow truck, that $200 tow is a good deal. Tom, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I got a 2015 Mitsubishi Outlander Sport with. And I bought it used, and it's got four-wheel drive in it, but I've never used the four-wheel drive.
Okay.
If you don't use it, do you lose it?
No, you don't. Then let me ask you a question. Describe the controls. Does it have a two-wheel drive button and a four-wheel drive button?
No, it's just got a four-wheel drive button.
Okay. And so it's only on and off, yes?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. 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 We're home free. This is. I want you to exercise that part of the car, but I don't want you to do it. Push that button when your 16-year-old kid starts driving. So, here's what I. You want to make sure you stop by like a discount tire and have them check all your air pressure in your tires, because what I'm going to tell you to do involves the tires all rotating the same. I don't want to have one tire 10 pounds lower than the other three. Okay? So you stop by like discount tire. You have them air up your tires. Then your wife wants to go to Prescott or your girlfriend, whatever. And you're going to go up I-17. So you're going to check your tires. You're going to hop on the I-17. And when you turn right and you get on the freeway, push the button for the four-wheel drive and just take it four-wheel drive all the way to Prescott. You're going straight. You're going at highway speeds, which is fine. And you're exercising everything. Everything's getting lubed. Everything's going through a heat cycle, getting hot, and then it'll get cold. What I don't want you to do is be a pizza delivery driver every other minute you're going to make a right turn or a left turn, because I don't want to put the clutches in your four-wheel drive under that kind of load. So straight ahead, bingo. We're going to lube everything. We're going to grease everything up. We're going to make it a better, and it'll work next time you ask it. So the next time you're going to go in the straight line for a long time, push the button and go 30, 40, 50 miles. You'll be fine.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
You betcha. I think the most embarrassing part of my industry is just recently in the last 5 years, of how we've responded to many of the enhancements in your car. And I'm telling you, unequivocally, there's no one in their world in the world that argue with me that the maintenance on your car is 50% of what it was before. So we just don't do things that we did before. Your coolant is 100,000-mile coolant. Your oil changes should be in the vicinity of 10 to 15,000 miles apart. Your transmission service annually. Your cooling system annually. Their tire rotations, maybe every oil change, maybe every other oil change. Your brakes. We may not touch your brakes until 50, 60, 70,000 miles, depending on who's driving. So just every aspect of your car is different. Well, when we're out there and we feed our family working on your car, we have to come up with stuff like buy three tires and get one free. We have to come up with stuff that we're going to... And I'm not serious when I say this, but just hear me out. If you'll come to my shop and for $100, I'm going to do your oil changes for free. Okay? That's all there is to it. I'm going to do your oil changes for free. So you're going to come in every 5,000 miles, and I'm going to do your oil changes for free. But behind the scenes, this is what I'm thinking. First of all, if I put synthetic in your car like it's supposed to have, then I'm draining it at 5,000 miles, and that's a sin. I shouldn't be doing that. That oil will go 10,000 miles, or at least until your oil monitor comes on and says, change your oil. There's all this going on in the background. But if I give you a free oil change, I get to take a bite of your wallet every 5,000 miles. I need to sell you stuff. I can sell you stuff. The best thing, if you wanted to, there was a guy that was talking financial stuff before our car show. And he was on it from 9 to 10. And he's talking about watching your money. Here's my advice to you. Learn your owner's manual. Figure out what your owner's manual says. The owner's manual is written for people from Alaska to Hawaii, from the East Coast to the West Coast, from North Dakota to Texas to Phoenix to Florida, for all of them. And don't let anybody talk you out of your owner's manual. The owner's manual is the manual written by the guy that built your car. And when he says to change the fluids to your transmission service at 100,000 miles, that doesn't mean 30. Because this is what you're going to hear. Oh, no, that manual wasn't written for Arizona. No, ma'am. No, Arizona is different, ma'am. You know Arizona is different. It gets hot here. That's kind of how it works. So, and 10% of my industry is bad. The rest of us play by the rules. And the rest of us, I think, are good people. Who might be ringing on the phone?
That would be Donna.
Donna, good morning, Donna. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, this is the first time we've heard you. Do you have a shop?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we need that, and we also have a question. Okay. If you are buying a new car, we're looking at an SUV, either in the gas or hybrid. A lot of people say these batteries can blow up and burn up in Arizona. Can you give us an idea of if you were to buy a luxury SUV right now, would it be gas, would it be hybrid?
It could be either one. I'd buy either one.
Okay.
I'm not afraid of the hybrids. There's all these kinds of people out there that are. You just don't know what their agenda is. The hybrid cars are fine cars. They don't have any more or less problems than everybody else does. Now, it's not like you're going to pull a horse trailer with one of those. and it's also going to have some stopping points in the maintenance schedule that are bigger than the gasoline-powered ones. So you've got some different systems in there that are going to be that 100,000-mile call that's going to be kind of expensive, but the hybrid people will say, but Mark, I saved a lot of money. And then 100,000 miles with gas and maintenance and stuff. And I agree. I say, yes, you did. Yes, you did. So with respect to a hybrid car, I would make sure I drove all of them and ask him if I could drive him for 3 or 4 hours. I would find something that, I like. I would find something that has a decent interest rate, or it, and I would be interested. And don't buy anything else. Just buy the car. Don't let them talk you into an aftermarket warranty or a maintenance package or a wax for life or nitrogen in your tires or any of that stuff. Don't buy any aftermarket insurance, because your hybrid's already going to have a 3 or 5 year warranty on it. You don't need to deal with anything other than maintenance for the first 3 or 5 years. They want to sell you something that's not going to even start until 5 years. So they keep all your money all that time. So it's just not. Let me ask you a question. Where do you live? Yeah, I mean, give me a cross streets or something.
Here in Scottsdale.
Okay, where, north or south?
In North Scottsdale.
Okay. If I were you and I was in the North Scottsdale area, I would go to Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway. Ma'am,
it's called Blackwell?
Blackwell. Yeah, Blackwell Automotive. And Tom is a good guy. I know. I've known him for years. I've seen him in his underwear. And and I have pictures of him in his underwear. In case he acts up, then I've threatened to show them to people. And he's right outside this outskirts of if you were in South Scottsdale, I would send you to Bell Automotive down on McDowell on the 101, but you're too far from there. I have shops throughout the valley. My shop is in Tempe. I'm a long way away from you. Thank you for honoring me and asking me about my shop, but I would feel better to redirect you to somebody else. Now, are you anywhere near Camelback?
I'm all around the valley, but in terms of when you say, are you anywhere near, what does that mean?
Well, I'm trying to find a shop that's close to your residence.
Well, North Scottsdale, but, I travel all over the valley, but we are looking for a new car, and we have so many people saying, you know, those batteries, and that's what I personally like, this luxury car. I've done a test drive, but I thought, oh, my gosh, Mark Salem, you may know. If I were to send you out today, go buy a car.
Okay, send me your email address, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com.
Okay.
I know this young man who has the ability to sell a car for any dealership. And he understands that how serious this is to Mark. I'm not going to make a dime on your car. I'm going to send you to somebody. He's going to talk to you about your options. He's not going to pack your receipt with a bunch of stuff, and don't worry about the batteries. You know what happened in golf carts just recently? In golf carts, we had to change the batteries on a regular basis. We just always had. Now they're coming out with a lithium battery for golf carts that's got a 5-year guarantee. Boom, battery problem's gone. The lithium push is a big deal. Lithium batteries are much better than the wet batteries we have and some of the other batteries that we think we have. So this new lithium battery craze is a good thing. It's a good thing. So,
well, personally, I don't mean to interrupt you. Scared to death of our heat in that battery in that car, because it's huge and it causes a lot of, it's got a lot of weight in the car, but it also gives it one of the best rides I've ever experienced, and I'm so torn, but okay. The guys say it doesn't pencil. Those are very expensive. It's expensive to go from gas to...
Okay, I disagree with the expensive part of it. I disagree with that. Yes, but think about this. We have batteries that sit underneath the hood of your car that are 200 degrees every mile you drive. And they're still lasting 3 years. And they're batteries. And we had golf cart batteries that we changed every year, and now we got lithiums that are going to last 5 years and already have 3 years of history on them.
So, and we got a new set of batteries coming out for the new generation, and it's not, well, I don't know if you know about that, but I'm not going to mention it on air, but they are in testing right now.
They're expensive. And it's going to cost to pay for all of that. But the bottom line is we're making progress. So I think it really matters is you need to go drive two of the hybrids and two of the other cars. You need to drive all four for 3 or 4 hours at a time before you decide what you're going to buy. I don't care what's underneath the hood. I'm more interested in the creature comforts and the color. And my mother, I would help my mom just like I'd help you. And there's nothing in it for me. You need to understand that. So mark@marksalem.com. I'll put you in touch with this gentleman that allows me to send people to him. And he represents every car line out there. And he's not one of those guys that's going to take advantage of you. I understand the finances of buying a new car this way. And Mark is not in the food chain, and you'll be treated fairly. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back with another hour of fun and frivolity. My name's Mark Salem. This is KKNT. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I got a couple things to do before I've got two callers, but we have three lines open as well, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. A couple of things. One of the questions I get all the time is well, what happens to Mark Salem and his repair shop when we have electric cars? And the answer is we've had this same problem when we've been here before. Electric cars still have cooling systems. They still have brakes. They still have tires. They still have air conditioning systems. They still have all kinds of stuff. And they're real computer intensive, which means that there's going to be some expense associated with talking to those guys. But then we have to interpret what language they're talking to us, and then we can be able to fix it. But they've got all kinds of avoidance cameras and sensors and stuff that are going to go bad. So all we're doing is we're trading a lawnmower for a weed eater. That's all we're doing. So one and the other. So I'm not real worried about it. Anyway, Wayne, you're up first. How can I help you?
The thought occurred to me as you were talking about oil changes. The sensors on late model cars, are they strictly a mileage calculation and they run off of the speedometer, or is there actually some evaluation of the viscosity of the oil or something else that turns the light on to say it's time to change the oil?
Wow. That is the best question in the world. What part of town do you live in?
Chandler.
Okay. All right. I'm going to buy your next oil change. Okay? I'm serious. That's just an absolute great question. I can't think them all by myself. The answer to your question is, it is an algorithm based on the following. How fast, how slow, how many minutes, how many seconds, what temperature, how hot, how cold, air on, air off, stop and go, average speed. It looks at all of that. And here's why. Every time we heat the oil up and the engine temperature gets to 220, which is where it should be, water boils at, get this right,
212.
Okay, so at 220, we're going to turn the water to a vapor. We're going to suck it out through the PCV valve, send it out the tailpipe. So the monitor, the engine goes, well, he's been in that heat range 220 for about an hour and a half. So I'm going to check the box of does the oil have water in it? Probably not. On the other hand, Wayne's wife goes to the liquor store 2 blocks away 3 times a day. And that's all she does. Her light's going to come on a lot sooner than your light does. And forgive me if I didn't mean to make fun of your wife, but you get my point.
That's
short
right.
Trips versus long trips. And yes, the answer is the change oil light or your due for service light is since probably at least 2010 for the last 10 years and for sure the last 5 or 6 years. The computer is looking at engine temperature, ambient temperature, speed, RPM, stop and go, all that stuff. All that stuff. Okay?
Okay.
That it?
Well, it's good to know.
Okay,
thank
now
you.
You're going to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, Salem like the cigarette, mark@marksalem.com, and send me an email, and I will hook you up in the Chandler area, in the Tempe area, and I'll pay for your next oil change.
Okay,
And please don't go buy a semi that holds 400 gallons of oil between now and then, okay?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, you betcha, Wayne. Al, you're up next. How can I help you?
I heard your question a while ago from a person who wanted to know about driving a four-wheel drive, or is he one of these push-button four-wheel drive things?
Yes, sir.
I have an older model vehicle that has four-wheel drive, but you have to engage it, but you can do it on the fly as long as you're at low speed. And I just wondered if I could drive it that way occasionally to keep the front axles lubricated.
Absolutely. When I had my 74 Chevy half-ton pickup that was four-wheel drive, it had hubs on the front. You remember those. And when I was going to... Okay.
I got out in the snow and turned them into those hubs.
I could tell. And so I was born and raised in Douglas, and so sometimes I'd leave Phoenix and go home. And so that 250-mile jaunt, I'd lock the front hubs. And I'd just spin that rear end, and I'd swirl that oil up, and I'd lubricate everything. And I didn't put it in four-wheel drive. I just locked the hubs, which now locks the wheels to the axles and to the front drive shaft. I'm really not in four-wheel drive until I put the shifter into four-wheel drive. But I could lock the hubs. But in your case, the answer is yes. I don't want you delivering pizza with it in four-wheel drive, which means you're making tight right turns and left turns and stuff like that. But if you're going to go from one side of the valley to the other and you're going to be on the freeway for 20 or 30 minutes, then yes, you can put it in four-wheel high.
Wonderful.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
You bet. You know, us old guys, we communicate. You know what I mean? We can read one another's minds. Four-wheel drive, okay. Question mark. So anyway, that's the Henri Mark talking right there, and I have a couple other things to tell you. Obviously, everybody knows that the housing market's going crazy. I think Payson started before Phoenix did, but I'm not one of those experts. But I can tell you up here in Payson, the house goes on the market at 1201 and it's sold at 1202. But here's the difference between there and from my house in Tempe to where I'm at in Payson is 93 miles. It's an hour and 41 minutes for me, and it's an hour and 30 minutes for my wife. I'm usually hauling, so that is my excuse. But on the other hand, yesterday's temperatures, yeah, 41 yesterday morning and 86 yesterday afternoon. For those of you that are coming up here this weekend, the forests are they're really particular about the forest and campfires and all that kind of stuff. I would strongly suggest you follow the rules, because the temperament up in the hill country, up in the rim country, is that asking and begging and saying please may not be a continuing plan. They may start sighting, and it seems to me that might be something that would happen this fire season just because of the fires that are already all over Arizona. So please try to obey the rules. But when you come up on Friday night and when you go home on Sunday afternoon, you know that the freeways are stacked up and just plan for a little extra time. But by the same token, Payson's real estate market is no different than your real estate market, except we have better weather. yeah, we have better weather up here. Anyway, when it comes to if you're going to buy in Payson, I'm going to give out a free shout out to a lady that has been with my family as a realtor for probably 20 years or more. Her name is Lori Coleman, and Lori represents my family and friends up here in Payson. So if you want to talk to a realtor here in Payson, I would suggest that you talk to Lori Coleman. And Lori would be happy to help you and send you information. She's very, very good at what she does. I don't make a dime on your commission. I'm not making any money on it. I just think the world of Lori, and I'll tell you a real quick story about Lori. I was buying some horse property up here. And I'm going to just use numbers that don't represent the truth, but that you'll understand. They wanted $100,000 for this acre. And she says, do you really like it? And I said, yes, I really do. And she says, okay, so what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want you to make him an offer. And she says, okay, what do you want me to tell him? And I said, how about 60? And she didn't laugh. She just smiled. And she said, okay. Now, I was just kind of testing her to see if she had the wherewithal to do that. She did. And this was quite a while ago. This was 5, 6, 7 years ago. And we ended up buying it for virtually nothing, and we were really happy. But I just remember that she didn't hedge. She was prepared to do that. So I think the world of Lori, because she's, and Renee, my wife, loves Lori too. She's just really good, and she'll tell you the truth, and she won't lie to you, and she'll offer you lots of different looks. But up here, like I suspect Prescott and Sholo and Heber and the, you know, this particular mountain area, the Rim Country area, houses are going pretty fast. So you got to be able to move and move fast. So Lori Coleman in Payson. I don't know the company she works for, but it's not going to be that hard to find Lori. Who we got next, Gil?
We have Alan.
Alan, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yes, you've been talking a lot about oil. I have a 2007 Tundra with 192,000 miles, and I do use full synthetic. Question is, since I've retired, I don't put that many miles on my truck. So do I wait for the 8 to 10,000 miles, or do I change it once a year? Because I think I'm putting less than 2,000 miles on my truck now.
A year?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a great question, but I have an answer. I am a trained expert in oil. If you were my customer, I'd back you up to a semi-synthetic, a blended oil, and I'd bring you in once a year. And I'd cut your oil change in half, cut your oil change dollars in half. That's what I would do. Now, I could even go a step further and use the same weight and put you in a conventional oil that covers 5 to 7,000 miles a year. And that would cover you, and that would cut your oil down way far. Your engine doesn't care, and it doesn't know, and there's no way your engine has a brain to know if you put Valvoline or Pennzoil or Chevron or whatever in your car. It doesn't know if you put a conventional oil or a semi-synthetic oil or a synthetic. It doesn't know. Your car has a brain, but it controls spark and fuel, and it doesn't analyze this kind of stuff. Your question is absolutely perfect because that happens a lot.
1 minute.
But if I were your guy that was changing your, I'd just bring you in at the beginning of the summer, and I'd put the same weight, but I'd put a conventional. I'd get as close to the conventional as I could, and I'd bring you in every June, every April or May, every year on a conventional oil. And as long as you didn't put more than 5,000, 6,000 miles on it, you would be happy, and so would I. That's how I would handle it.
Oh, awesome.
What part of town?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Do you have a shop in your geographical area that you like?
I've been doing it myself. I'm in Queen Creek.
Okay. What have you been putting into it?
I've been putting Mobil 1 full synthetic, the one that the Toyota recommends. I think it's
520.
Yeah.
I'd put a conventional 530 in it. If you could find a 5, I don't think you're going to find a 520 in anything other than a semi-synthetic or a synthetic.
Okay.
But whatever you have three different levels of oils, just get down towards the bottom. Get a 530 conventional, put it in there. You're going to be fine. You're going to be protected. And it's going to you
cost too.
Oh, you already know because you changed the oil yourself. The cost is the synthetic is three times what conventional oil is.
So, right.
Yeah.
I change the filter at the same time or
yeah,
can
you're,
I go one change?
No. Well, you're going to change the filter every time you change the oil.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that idea. Of doing it, I think people lose track. I don't think they have the magic marker when they're laying underneath that kind of stuff. So my suggestion would be is do filter and fluid and do them at the same time, and I think you'll be just fine. And if I was in your shoes, I'd be doing the same thing. Got to run. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Okie dokie, 5904. I wrote that down, so... I made a mistake on my log, Gil, but I fixed it, so it won't affect you and you won't be any trouble. Gil's the one that's flying on the airplane. I'm sitting in the first class seat with my feet up on the seat in front of me, and I'm doing the show, but Gil's really the one that makes everything work real well. Just thought I'd let you know that for sure. Anyway, Larry Harker's Auto is up at 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967. They do really good. Bob and Ellen operate at Larry Harker's Auto. Bob is in the shop and Ellen's at the front counter. And those of you ladies who want to do business with someone who has a lady on board, on site, and has authority and the knowledge to look a greasy technician in the eye and say, no, son, we're not doing that, then this is a good place to go. There's five or six shops in this valley that have strong females that have a predominant position in how that shop goes and runs. And Harker's is one of them. So if you're a woman that would like to deal with a lady, Harker's is one of five or six shops in town. You can email me, mark@marksalem.com, and I'll tell you the rest. But Harker's is a good shop, and Bob runs a really good shop, and he is well-equipped to fix almost anything you've got wrong with your car. Dan, number one, how can I help you?
Good morning. How are you doing today? Listen to your show all the time. Love the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'm fine today. Thank you.
So I've got a 77 truck with a 400, and it's got bad oil pressure. Rebuilt the engine, got bad oil pressure. Put a high-volume oil pump, still has bad oil pressure. It's got 60 when it's cold and less than 15 when it's hot. I've got a mechanical gauge in the vehicle, and I've got a Holley multi-port fuel injection that has an electric sender gauge also, and they both agree with the pressure.
So you're worried about 15 pounds of pressure?
Yeah.
What kind of oil are you running?
2050 rather.
Okay. Is the oil pressure light turning on the light? Is the oil pressure?
It doesn't have a light. It's got a mechanical gauge factory.
Okay. Is it in the red zone in the mechanical gauge?
It doesn't really have a red zone, but it's all the way down on the nothing mark.
Okay. Usually there's this little goal post on the gauges of the older cars. So there's a horizontal line, then there's a goal post on either end, and that's what they call the normal range. Is it within the goal post, do you think?
No.
Okay. All right.
It barely gets off the first. It barely gets off the parked post.
Okay. If you and I were to get into this and drive it down the freeway at 70 miles an hour, would it start clattering?
Not a bit. So if you touch the throttle, oil pressure goes right up.
Okay.
It's just that idle. It idles at 1,000.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, the oil pump itself dumps extra pressure, or you've got some leak at one of the cam bearings or something like that. But if you're going down the road at 70 miles an hour and you have oil pressure and you're not clattering, and that thing will go from here to Flagstaff, turn around and go to Tucson and then come back and not blow up the motor, and you had oil pressure that whole time and it never started clattering, then you don't really have a problem. The real question is that what you've got is not within acceptable standards of you and me, but in reality, I suppose I would probably put a 30 weight, a straight 30 in it, and see what changes that made. The only other thing that you could do is you're not going to be losing oil pressure at a rod bearing or a main bearing. Have a significant leak there without some noise. But cams you could.
Well, look, the cam bearings are new and the cam is new. I plastic gauge the whole assembly, putting it together, and the rods were about 1,000. The mains were 1, 1.5, and the rear main was 2.
Okay. So let's do this. Run 1,000 miles. Put fresh oil in it next time. Run 1,000 miles. Take an oil sample. Run another 1,000 miles. Take an oil sample. You can get the sample on the internet for peanuts. Send them the oil and see what kind of growth there is between sample 1 and sample 2. If there's no growth in stainless steel, copper, iron, brass, blah, 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 then you don't have a problem.
Okay.
That's what I would do. But why are you idling it at 1,000?
That's just where the fuel injection idled. I haven't dialed it down yet.
Okay.
With the AC on and stuff, and I don't know. Just That's where it was. I just left it there.
Okay. It's a highly modified motor. Somebody has done a bunch of work and taken a Fred Flintstone rock crusher and turned it into a Microsoft port fuel injected, sequential port fuel injected motor.
Yeah. It runs real good.
Okay. Okay. As long as you aren't shedding engine metal in it, then I'd say, hey, come pick me up and let's see if we can burn the back tires off of it.
Oh, it'll smoke the back tires. Don't worry. I was just about had to run 2050 to get such good oil pressure. That was. When I first put it together, I had 1030 in it, and it was miserable. It was, I don't remember what it was. I don't think it made 10 at an idle.
Yeah.
I mean, hot engine at idle.
Okay. And, folks, what we're talking about between me and Dan, number one, it has nothing to do with anything else in the world. He understands what he's saying, and I understand what he's saying, but you could walk away with the idea that if you're not happy with your oil pressure, put peanut butter in your engine, and that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about just technically what makes changes and stuff like that. So, Dan, you'll understand that the last thing I want people to do is start putting peanut butter in their engines and having their fuel economy drop by 2 or 3 miles to the gallon, and then the catalytic converter starts plugging up because we're running fuel through it like a Mississippi River, you know, a flood. Those are the kinds of issues. Anyway, thank you, Dan. Good luck to you. Dan, number two, you're up.
Yeah, Mark, I have a concern about oil filters. Could you actually flush them out and reuse them?
No.
Because it's paper inside?
Why would you want to? They're $5-6?
I was just wondering.
Yeah, no, they do make them one that you can put on and take apart and clean up and stuff like that. But, no, an oil filter has a bypass valve inside of it. It has pleated paper that can sometimes be 10 feet long if you unwound the whole thing. And it also typically the trash on the bottom will fall to the bottom. So oil filters are not on my radar screen at all. I firmly believe that there's one guy in the entire world that makes oil filters, and they're all the same. So for me, when I go through lots of oil filters, I put the same oil filter on my wife's car and on my car and on my truck that I put on my customers' cars. But the bottom line is I don't think that there's a significant difference for Mark Salem to worry about what brand, what the box says on the oil filter. So
yeah, I was just concerned if I could do that, but then again, I knew they had paper in them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's pleated. You can take a big pipe wrench and cut the dome off of it and take it apart and look at it. And if you go on Wix's website, W-I-X's website, they've got a video there. The last time I was there, showed them they cut a can off of it and then they unpleated everything. So yeah, don't even put in a filter that pre-filters the oil to the filter. Don't do that. That would be a restriction that wouldn't probably turn out well. Anyway, 602-508-0960 is the phone number. The lines are wide open. We have 5 lines. We did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 calls this hour. Actually, up until now. And we have a half an hour left on the show. So you're welcome to join us. All you have to do is call 602-508-0960. I'm really good at this. My husband says this, my dad says this, would you tell me who's right? I'm really good at that. I'm really good at my wife wants to buy a Maserati and I want a Ford F-550. I'm pretty good with those kinds of questions as well. I'm not good with questions that start with, on Google it says, I have no patience for Google, and it's really Fred in a New Hampshire penitentiary giving everybody automotive advice, and he hasn't been out in years. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair stuff. You can call in anytime you want, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 and Bell Road. I've known Kurt for 25 plus years. There's been many times that I have sent him a customer, and virtually every single time I get a nice note from the customer telling me about their great experience. Especially a lady who was told by 3 different other shops that she needed a motor and all she needed was an oil pressure switch. Oil pressure switch was lying about the oil pressure to the dashboard. There was nothing wrong with the engine. So Kurt is a hero in my book. So if you live near I-17 and Bell Road, then Kurt's would be a good place. If you don't have a shop, Kurt's would be a good place to start. Karen, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi there.
Hi there.
I hope you can help me because I'm just don't feel like I'm getting the right answer anywhere. I flew up to Washington back in January and I bought a 93 Ford Ranger four-wheel drive 4-liter from my dad who had it for 10 years. He replaced he rebuilt the engine himself. And he drove it that way, I don't know, for 3 years or so, he said. So I go out and buy it. I drive back here to Arizona, and it did pretty good. But now it's smoking blue smoke like crazy. And I can't imagine that it would be ringed because he drove it for so long, and he would drive it back and forth to Idaho. I spoke with him the other day, and he's kind of leaning towards maybe it blew a valve seal or something, but all the mechanics that I have taken it to, it's like nobody wants to look at it. They all just say, oh, well, you need a new engine. It's ringed. And my gut tells me that's not what it is.
Okay, well, there's something about women who listen to that little voice inside of them. And guys, most of my cowboy buddies, that little voice inside of them is just an irritant that needs to be itched. This is no big deal. This is no big deal. What part of town do you live in?
A Mesa.
Okay. I would talk, I'd call Brian over at Thompson's Auto Repair, but I can tell you that this is the procedure. This isn't a big deal. First of all, we're going to find out where the blue smoke's coming from and which cylinder. So the first thing we're going to do is pull all the spark plugs out of it, and it's going to tell us which cylinder's pumping oil. It's not likely.
They're all clean.
They're okay, all clean. Good. Then we've got to be sucking the oil through the valve stems. That's the only other place it's coming. So it's coming through the valve stems. It's being introduced with the fuel, and the gasoline is diluting it, and so we're sending it out. So then the question is which one of them have we got problems with? It's this to track it. I don't know what the repair is going to be, but to track it down is no big deal. We would also run a compression test when we had the spark plugs out of it just to make sure that we had some semblance of order on the compression side of all the little four-liter 4-liter. It could have a bad intake gasket where we're sucking oil out of the valley. That would typically show up on the spark plug. And what bothers me about that the spark plugs are all clean is we're pumping blue smoke out the tailpipe, but we have clean spark plugs. But this blue smoke is created by the explosion of gasoline and oil. So how is it that we can have clean spark plugs when we're driving down the road fogging for mosquitoes? You see my point?
Yeah, badly.
So it's. I hope you're not telling them that the spark plugs are clean, because somebody else told you that. The spark plugs.
No. Actually, we pulled them out myself, and I replaced them all, and
they were clean.
I was expecting to see oil in there, and yeah, actually, I kept them all just in case anybody wanted to see them.
Okay, so the only other place that we could ingest oil into the combustion chamber and it has to go past the exhaust valve into the exhaust and come out the tailpipe. So the only other place would be valve guide seals. And to be honest with you, we don't have to take the heads off. What we typically do if we're going to have to go in and do seals is we just air up the cylinder, we back off the two rockers, we slide the springs off, we use air in the cylinder so the valve doesn't fall in the cylinder, and if it does, Karen, you're in big trouble. So somebody better know what they're doing if they're going to be doing this. But anyway, we can replace valve guide seals. Now, if the valve guides are the problem, seals is just going to be a temporary fix. So I don't know who did the valve guides. I don't know if they were knurled. I don't know if they were replaced. I don't know any of that kind of stuff. But to find out where the oil leak is, it's a piece of cake. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in Mesa, just off of Alvista.
Okay. I would certainly call Brian over at Thompson's Auto Repair and talk to him. You could go to Bell Automotive at the 101 in McDowell, which is in the very southeast corner of Scottsdale. Bell Automotive, Thompson's Auto Repair, and the other one would be, have you got your pencil handy?
I do.
All right, you're going to write fast. You ready?
Yeah.
480-598-1234. Ask for Andy. And my daughter, Andy. This show isn't about my shop. So that's why I avoid those kinds of conversations altogether. But my daughter runs our store, and we have plenty of capabilities to answer the question, why have I got blue smoke? That's the question, is why have I got blue smoke?
Okay. I do notice when I first turn the engine on in the morning, it'll surge. It'll go from like 1,000 RPMs, and then it might go up close to 2, and it'll just kind of float back and forth between those two and just up and down and up and down. And sometimes the oil pressure gauge, well, pretty much every day, but it just depends on what it feels like doing, it'll kind of shake back and forth. But I also noticed that the battery one does that on occasion too. So I'm almost thinking that maybe those two are just, it's an old truck, it's never been replaced, maybe they're just worn out.
Yeah, we're not gonna do the cold weather startup surge. We'll deal with that later. Okay. And whether that's related to the blue smoke out the tailpipe, it could be. But we're not going to follow that trail. We're gonna work on the blue smoke out the tailpipe. That's what needs to happen. And then if by chance we find a vacuum leak that's causing it to suck oil out of the valve covers, and that's the blue smoke, then the vacuum leak is what's causing the surge. So once I fix the vacuum leak, I'll fix the surge and the blue smoke. You see my point? Let's focus on what we start with. And then, and a lot of the questions you ask, first of all, I love dealing with ladies because we can have a conversation as opposed to the hairy-chested guys who want to tell me how to fix their car because their dad told them. The idea is you have valid questions, but my answer is this. I can answer them after I fix your car. I can answer. That's how it works, okay?
One other thing I'm going to throw out there is, and I don't think it has anything to do with the blue smoke, but I know when he replaced the parts in the engine that he did not replace the rocker arms and the push rod. So they're making noise, but they're not going to cause the blue smoke, right?
No, unless if they're too tight, it's going to backfire. And if they're too loose, and it's also going to have a rough idle. And if they're too loose, they're going to clatter. But if the valves are dancing, okay, if the valves are dancing around in the valve stems, stem seals, if the valves are dancing around in the valve, I'm missing the word right now. Then he knurled them and he should have replaced them. So all of that can happen, but it's just a step by step process. I got to run, but thank you very much, Karen and Stephen. You stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. There's two good shops I haven't talked about, and I'm going to do that real quick. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983 and even before that. He's honest. He's dependable. He knows how to fix cars. He knows how to handle his employees and treat his employees with respect. And he also knows how to insist that they do the right thing, not what's best for them or their pocketbook or their paycheck. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, he's on the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. He's a good guy, and he has lots of ASE Master Certified Technicians. On the other end of the country, Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. I've known Chuck Nide since 1968. I know his son, Derek, who helps run his operation. So in Sun City, there's lots and lots of great shops. But the one I ship people to is Auto Dynamics, and they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Steven, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Boy, you call me Steven. That's what my mother called me when I was bad.
You know, that's what Gil told me.
Steve.
Gil's the engineer that took your name.
And boy, if I heard my middle name, Steven Michael, oh, I was in a lot of trouble.
Oh, and Mark Edward, the same way, boy. I know exactly what you're talking about. When my mom said Mark Edward, my butt was grass.
Duck. Yep. Hey, the reason I'm calling, I've got 2006 Toyota Tundra. Perfect. Air conditioning, when the outside temp is at like 95 and above, when I'm at a traffic signal, I've just started it up, and low RPMs, air conditioner runs warm. As soon as I'm, even if I rev it, if I hold the throttle up to a couple grand, if I'm parked, it doesn't change. Once I get on the road, air is flowing, I'm assuming, over the condenser at the front of the truck. The air conditioner is perfect, ice cold, cold as I want it. Toyota dealer, who I've always gone to for service, evacuated the system, recharged it, and put the dye in it, and there's no leaks. I'm baffled. They say there's nothing wrong.
Okay. Well,
it didn't do this when it was new.
Okay. Well, first of all, if it blew cold and you liked it, then it wasn't a Freon level issue. So I'm unclear as to how you got to where we're going to evacuate and recharge it. But in reality, we have equipment we didn't have today that we didn't have yesterday. So we suck it all out. It's supposed to hold 31 ounces. And we find out that you're 28, so we put the rest of it in. Those are the kinds of things that we typically use.
I think there was a minor discrepancy. I don't remember the amount. It's been a couple months ago. But now that it's hot, it work.
But we have to listen to our customer, and you said it blew completely to your satisfaction on the cold side when you're moving. The difference is the airflow across the condenser when you're stopped, and that has to do with the electric fans or the fan clutch. That's all it is, electric fan or the fan clutch. We got airflow problems across it, and all we have to do is fix that. So the fact that it works fine when you have airflow and it's substandard to you, Stephen, when you're stopped, that's really kind of easy. That's all.
Okay, so it's not the only other thing I could think of was the air conditioner pump not moving flow.
No.
Pool guy, so a pump, pump doesn't flow.
Nope. Because it's when we spin and spool up the compressor, you find the air conditioning, the temperature of the air conditioning perfect. Well, that same compressor is capable at low end, at high end. It's an airflow problem. Okay. The difference between idling and 70 miles an hour is how much air is being shoved through the radiator and the condenser. So, and you said it's an 06 and it's a Tundra, and I don't know how many bugs are between the condenser and the radiator. I don't know what that area looks like, but I'd be putting a flashlight on one side and looking through the grill on the other side, and if I found half of the flying insects in the world in there, then that's all you have to do is clean that out. Okay?
Right. Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the help.
Thank you, Stephen. John, you're up next.
Well, thank you, Mark. Question's been bugging me for a long time. It's not an engine problem or anything. My uncle was an old wrench twister in Nebraska in the 50s and 60s, and a farmer friend of his invented something that tremendously increased gas mileage back then, and either the oil companies or somebody came in and gave him over $1 million for that little invention and told him to shut up. Speaking with my son-in-law last night, I get 14 miles to the gallon for my truck, being a 98 Ford. He has a Dodge Ram. He gets like 21 as the year 21. Why is not our gas mileage increased with all the computers and the sophisticated equipment that we have now to where it should be much higher than what we're getting?
Well, it has, but we just need to frame it appropriately. So we've got Honda Civics out there that are running 40 and 50 miles to the gallon. I've got a one-ton truck, a one-ton Dodge four-wheel drive that gets 16 miles to the gallon. And my wife, God bless her, my wife drag races everybody she can because, my son built the truck and it's got a little extra here and there, and I tell her not to do that, but the truck isn't babied. It pulls horse trailers with four horses. It pulls tractors with bobcats on them. So, and I'm 15 and a half, 16 and a half miles to the gallon. So it's not fair. We forget that in the 70s we were in the 9 and 10 miles per gallon. We forget that people would be in their garage for 30 minutes and die. Today, you're going to die of starvation in your garage before you die of asphyxiation in your garage. The tailpipes are so clean today. There's nothing coming out of the tailpipe, where in the old days, everything was coming out of the tailpipe. I mean, when was the last time, and I don't mean to be gruesome, but when was the last time you heard somebody lock them? If you're going to lock yourself in your garage with your brand new GM, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Chrysler product, you're going to die of starvation before you die of anything else.
Oh, yeah. So I told my kids when we get behind an old car, it says, smell this. This is what used to be in the old days.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And, you know, you and I and many other gray-haired guys,
we can smell those cars when we our noses are like the emission tests of the 70s. We can pull up behind a car and I can tell HC from CO. I can tell that this guy's running just big time fuel out of his tailpipe because I can smell it.
Correct.
And so yes, we have all of that, but also keep in mind, to defend the industry, the fuel economy is directly related to the foot of the persons whose hands are on the wheel. Now,
such as your wife, eh?
And I followed my wife from Facing the other day, and I'm not usually, I am capable of being the lead dog in the pack. And she's driving a Ford Edge, and I don't know what happened. After 400 years of marriage, she bought a Ford, and I haven't spoke to her since, and I've been eating my McDonald's cards about maxed out. But my Dodge has a tough time keeping up with her little bitty Ford Edge with the V6, but not always. I mean, I can pass her every once in a while. When she's doing 50, I can pass her at 55 or 60. But, yeah, it's... Your point is well taken, but we have to think about computer-controlled spark, timing, fuel, D-cell, transmissions with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 speeds, overdrive, lockup. We have all these innovations, and now we have our bicycles don't have 10 speeds. They got 30 speeds. And so now we've got all this going on, plus we got a computer that's looking at the tailpipe. So you're right. It's okay. Different, but you and I can still smell a stinker in front of us.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that, Mark.
You betcha. Thank you. All righty. You know, I haven't got this wound up in a long time. Do we have any other callers?
Lines are open, Mark.
Okay. Old. I'm just writing bad MPGs. New plus. We started talking about RPMs and the speed of engines, and peanut butter is the oil and all that kind of stuff. There are a lot of my friends who disagree with me, but they build cardboard boxes, and one guy sells lots of ink pens, and one guy's an electrician, and one guy's a paint and body guy, and none of them have had the hours and the months and the years of my life sniffing tailpipes. I remember long before we sniffed tailpipes, I could tell, and along with some of the gray-haired guys who taught me, we could tell that the float had sunk on this quadra jet, or the Holley has blown the power valve, all that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is, today we are in great shape today. We have cars that if you don't overheat them, and you don't cook the motor by an overheat, and you don't run it low on oil, that car will circle the earth 30 times. 30 times. And you lose sight of that. You go, oh, my car's got 100,000 miles. Yeah, it's been around the equator four times. The equator's 24,488,000 miles or something like that. 24,844 miles. I don't remember what it is. 25,000, call it. So the bottom line is that at 100,000 miles, you've been around the equator four times, and then obviously 200,000, it's eight times. Don't lose sight of that. Don't lose sight of that. Who we got, Gil?
We have Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I have a question. I inherited a truck. It was actually my dad's old truck. My brother restored it, put a 383 stroker in it. It's a 1952 Chevy. And he passed away a couple years ago, and I inherited it. And I'm just wondering, I never got any information on what type of oil he was using in there. I've asked some other car buddies. They said to use standard oil. Some say to use synthetic. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. Well, tell me, does it have a carburetor or fuel injection?
It has a carburetor.
Okay. Does it have dual exhaust?
It's a Holley.
Okay. It's a Holley. Okay.
Rochester. So
it's a Rochester. Okay, good. So it's got a four barrel. It's a 383 stroker, which is a small block that's been beefed up. It probably has dual exhaust,
right.
Automatic or standard?
Yes. It's automatic.
Okay. Well,
it's been completely redone.
There's only four companies that make all the oil in the world: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. You want me to go through those again for you? Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron.
Okay. Everything
comes through their refineries. I don't really care about the oil, a brand. I'm kind of shopping price. Right now I'm with Chevron because I have a long-term deal with Chevron, and we might pour
20 or 30 or 40 or 50 gallons a day. So I just happen to renegotiate my contract with Chevron. Before that, I was with Valvoline, and before that, I was with Shell. So I don't know if I'd worry about it. I think what I would do if I were you is, if you don't have any oil leaking and it doesn't blow any blue smoke, I think what I'd put in that is probably a 520 or a 530 synthetic. I'd change it once a year. How many miles a year does this car go, you think?
Not very many, because I mostly just take it to car shows of 3 or 4 or 5 times a year.
Okay. So 5 or 6,000 miles, I'd put a conventional in there. Probably. I'd probably put a 530 in there. A conventional oil change it once a year at the beginning of the summer, and you'd be home free. And anybody that wants to argue, just send them my way, and hopefully they have the oil credentials that I have. Okay? So
I've been listening to your show, and I thought you're the guy to ask.
Yeah, I do that. I have lots of vehicles. I have a supercharged Corvette, and or a Corvette with a twin turbo in it, and I have a blower on a 2010 Camaro. And I follow my own advice. These cars get 3, 4, 5,000 miles a year. Just change them once a year, right before the summertime, and use a conventional oil. That gives me the protection I need.
Right.
So, in your particular case, that's what I would do. And here's something else I'm going to pass to you. Okay, get it up at operating temperature. Advance the timing a little bit at a time until she just rattles on hard acceleration, and then back off the timing. And when we say back off the timing, the screwdriver's on the distributor, and you go like this twice. Okay? That's called backing off. And then if it doesn't drag the starter when it's hot, otherwise you go in and start it and it goes,
right.
If it doesn't drag the starter, that's your sweet spot. If it drags the starter, take a couple of more degrees off of it, okay?
Okay.
There's no spec for that. Yeah, there's no spec for that 383. I just gave you the Mark Salem spec, and that's every old gray-haired guy in the world knows how that goes. Thank you very much. My email's mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question, I'll answer it. I would really appreciate it if you just give me your phone number, and we can discuss it, because I hate to type. My fingers are fat. They're huge. My wife yells at me. She makes me capitalize letters and stuff like that. So tell me what the situation is, and then just give me a phone number. I'm going to call with a block number, but I'll identify myself immediately. Hi, this is Mark Salem. You sent me an email. Have you got a minute to talk? That's what I say. So mark@marksalem.com. See you next Saturday right here on KKNT at 10 a.m.